This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. And that was the song Let's Go Fly a Kite from the original stage production of Mary Poppins. Thanks for joining us. The film Mary Poppins has implanted in many of us the idea of the proverbial proper English nanny, that's for sure. But it also has helped cement in the minds of many the iconic versions of the proper middle-class English father and his English housekeeper and maid. Joining us today from the cast of the stage production of Mary Poppins at the Ohio Theater through May 8th, by the way, are the actors. Our actors, Michael Dean Morgan, who plays George Banks, the father in Mary Poppins. Hello. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also Rachel Eisen. She plays Mrs. Brill, the maid. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Morning.
To our listeners, tell us about your first experience with Mary Poppins. Was it the book? Was it the movie? Was it the show, the Broadway show? Tell us what your impression is, and we'd love to hear from you. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you know we're on Facebook as well. Okay, so Rachel and Michael, were you fans of the story or the movie as children? What came
Absolutely.
First for you?
Well, it was always the film because I was brought up on it. I went to see it when it first opened in Hastings. I remember this on a wet afternoon.
You always remember.
It was incredible.
We've had a lot of those, haven't we?
Yeah, a lot of those here. And a lot of those in England, of course. So I was raised on the film completely and utterly.
Well, so were you walking around saying, where's our English nanny, Mom?
Absolutely. No, but yes, everybody. I actually have this fantastic memory, which I hadn't thought about until I started rehearsing the show. And I was given a little post office. You have post offices here, yes.
Oh, yes.
Post office kit. And with little...
Like a toy, yes.
Oh, okay. And a cardboard box, and it had little plastic bottles full of little tiny candy. There you go.
Uh-huh.
You don't know what sweets are. And we had a bedroom in my bedroom at the time. The floor was lino. You have linoleum.
Linoleum.
Okay. Yeah. And I would sing Feed the Birds and throw these.
Oh.
And I hadn't thought about that for nearly, 40-odd years. It's incredible. That's all been my life all the way through.
You know, that's funny. When I was a kid growing up, I still remember cleaning our living room, singing Spoonful of Sugar, pretending the pillows were floating through with magic
there you go.
So forth. And we were so excited that our mom would come home and that everything would be clean and Mary Poppins had
but
done it.
But that was
it.
The thing. Whenever rooms were untidy, I wish Mary Poppins was here.
I remember on a blustery day when I was a kid, wanting to really fly a kite, and we went out and actually made some fake kites from just paper, and we were so depressed. But now when I look back and I looked at the date of the movie, 1964, yes, I was obviously obsessing about Let's Go Fly a Kite.
Sure,
there's no other explanation
and
for it.
Nobody flies a kite without singing Let's Go Fly
or thinking it, or
Especially my kids.
So you were fans of the movie. So for you, it was the movie. And
totally.
You read the story?
Never.
Never.
Not until I started rehearsing the show. The books. I was brought up on Beatrix Potter and Edie Blyton and didn't even know there were books. So was astounded that the show was based more on the books or as much on the books as the film. So you have fantastic elements from the film and the fantastic elements from the show, which bring the more family side of the story to the stage and far more meaningful, I think, too.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more. I mean, there's a heart in the film, there's no doubt. But I think they bring out the heart in this family story more than we see in the film. And and they also expand it. I mean, you've got the best parts of this film and also really exceptional, exciting moments from the book, such as statues coming to life and this new character, which a lot of people who know the film aren't familiar with, Miss Corey, who runs this candy shop where she has people eating words, which is where supercalifragilistic finds its place.
And that's where it comes from.
Yes. Well, she goes into
a talking shop.
Yeah, and they go into this talking shop, and all these people are eating words so they can speak. That may not be as clear, but as a result, this great song comes out of it, and they put together this supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
And, of course, one of the great characters from the book that appears in the show and not in the film is Miss Andrew, who is the nanny that is called upon to put everything straight when Mary Poppins decides to leave the family to make them think what life can be like.
I have a question about the production of that, and I just want to remind folks you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Mary Poppins. Musical is at Ohio Theater through May 8th, and joining me in the studio, Michael Dean Morgan. He plays George Banks, the father in the Mary Poppins musical, and also Rachel Eisen. She plays Mrs. Brill, the maid. If you have a particular memory, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We've shared our memories. Now it's your turn. The production of that, I noticed a parallel when Mary Poppins appeared. There was lightning that time, too, wasn't there?
You mean the reveal of where Mary Poppins comes from, that sort of thing?
When she appears for the first time and it's just...
Well, it goes dark and then she's there.
She appears.
She just appears magically.
Okay.
Magic.
And Miss Andrew comes about. Now, Miss Andrew was Mr. Banks's nanny as a child. Very stern, very strict. And at one point, after Mary leaves, as she does in the film too, she leaves. Mrs. Banks goes and finds this nanny of Mr. Banks's childhood, and she ends up being quite a handful and quite a terror. Mm-hmm. And she appears in the same way that Mary appears.
Because we expect it to be Mary coming back.
Exactly.
That's right. You're sitting on the steps and you're waiting. Something I really like about the film, because it is embellished, or it's obviously it's coming from the book, is there's a lot more development of Mrs. Brill.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, Mrs. Brill is huge in the book. And in fact, Mrs. Brill and has her sidekick, Roberts and I, don't ask where that name comes from. It's a ridiculous name and nobody can get to the depths of it. But in the film, people will remember that there are two maids as such that are left to do everything. And why they were made into two maids, I don't know. But I'm basically both of them put together.
Yes.
Your sidekick,
Roberts and I, yes.
Is he in the book?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
And what was fantastic, I said, I wonder what my first name is. And there's a line in the book that said, well, if my name isn't Clara Brill, so there you go. You know, she's been left to cope with everything, basically.
So. Because it comes, so much more of it comes from the book.
Mm.
What did you get from the book, you know, the name, for instance, that helped you drive your characterization and how you filled out the role? Did you...
Well, yes, because she is very put upon. I mean, her skills are not fantastic. she's left to do the cooking. She's left to look after the children because the children have been pushing every nanny away, as is the case in the film, and we see that. So every time a nanny gets sacked, of course, because they leave on their own accord, Mrs. Brill gets left to have to do the whole of the running of the house.
And part of the book that you may not notice in the film, which is there and in the books, is that they're not doing that well. I mean, normally in this household, you'd have, a butler and
you'd
a maid
have a butler, you have,
and a boy.
Real upstairs, downstairs.
Yeah.
And they're down. Things are not going well.
Not going well. So actually, she is left. They say we're understaffed, and they really are. And in the book, you see that the house is falling apart just a little bit.
Right.
And they explain that. And you see that in the movie a little bit as well. But there's definitely tension, and that's where this whole the play starts. There's tension of something's not going well, and then all of a sudden Mr. Banks goes off to the bank and you find out he's not doing that well at the bank. He's not really that good at his job. And then suddenly he makes the wrong choice, as it were, you find out, and all of a sudden he gets fired.
Jeff in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Morning.
I wanted to add that in addition to the movie, the play, the book, I grew up during the 60s, and I was a kid, and we had something else. I don't know if it was Walt Disney that did it or if it was a record company, but many of the Walt Disney movies, you could go out and buy this LP, and the record jacket that it came in also had some stills from the movie, and I think it had some text, too. And I remember we had Mary Poppins, we had Song of the South, and I'm trying to remember what other ones we had.
Oh, yeah.
Sound of Music.
We had the same thing, too. We'd play the records all the time.
Sound of Music isn't Disney.
Oh, that's right. Rogers and Hampton.
But you'd have
I'm
had
waiting
all
for
those.
Lightning to strike.
But those live-action films, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Oh,
with
yeah,
some
we
of the
same
South.
Records, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And I've always been grown up with the sheet music as well that we would sing along to. I've always had the book.
Still had them.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I do. My children have it at home.
They still have the LPs back there.
We have sheet music. We have selection books. Completely.
I bet we have a bin somewhere in my mom's basement with a Mary Poppins record. I bet there's a bunch out there.
You know what? I bet my parents do too. I had to go ask them.
Before they get rid of it, you
before
should, Jeff.
Before they rummage sale it away.
Jeff, so you remember seeing the movie when you were a child?
You know, I don't know if I really remember seeing it. The other thing, the other place I might have seen it was, of course, on Sunday night. Walt Disney always had the television, The Wonderful World of Disney.
Sure.
I might have seen it then, but I don't know if I really, really remember actually going to a movie theater and seeing the movie.
Okay.
Right.
Well, thanks for your call.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Take care.
Bye.
If you have a special memory about Mary Poppins, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. One critic said that it was ill-conceived to give a rationale for Mr. Banks' miserableness, was the way it was put. But I wondered whether having that rationale makes it easier and more fulfilling to conceive how you would play the role.
That he's miserable?
That you understand why, that there, you know, this backstory, the Mrs.
I think
Ms.
you
Andrew
have to.
Was.
I think you have to know. Also, it gives also Mary something to do. It gives us an antagonist to work against. It gives us a reason why he's turned into such a sour human being. I think this production of it and this Disney's Mary Poppins on the Broadway version. I think so often you'll come into it and you'll think that you know what you're coming into. Oh, I've seen the film. I know what to expect. And I think what's great about what you just said is that you get a lot more, and you get a story that's great for kids, and it's a story that has a lot for adults as well. I mean, who can't relate to the fact that somebody loses a job or has a child, somebody who is took care of them as a child that they despised, but they thought was doing them the best they could. And there's that great journey where he realizes, wow, everything I thought to be true, everything I thought was good, I was wrong. I thought that this is how you need to raise a parent, raise a child. And this happens all the time. I mean, where you see a father thinking that I'm going to raise my kids the way my father raised me, and then somewhere down the line, I have two kids, you realize, you know what? I don't like my dad very much. You know, I don't talk to them. And I think he makes that realization. You know what? I don't want to raise my children like the way I was raised. I'm going to do something different.
Because it's a big history lesson, because it's set in 1910.
Exactly.
So
yeah, good point.
Queen Victoria died in 1901, and the whole feeling of the way that people actually behaved and how they treated their children was all on the verge of a huge change after being so restricted. And it was just, just before the First World War.
To marry for love? I mean,
absolutely not.
I mean, and you know, he does not show love towards his wife at the beginning of the show, but at the end of this journey, there's a loving family that we recognize in a modern. But you know, I think the play starts with what family was like at the turn of the century, in England and in America too.
We're talking about Mary Poppins. The stage production, the musical, is at the Ohio Theater through May 8th. My guests: Michael Dean Morgan, he plays George Banks, and also Rachel Eisen, who plays Mrs. Brill, the maid. Coming up, we'll meet the little girl. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and at 1 o'clock On Point begins. Ben Bernanke gives an unprecedented Federal Reserve press conference. On Point looks at the Fed's performance, the U.S. economy now, and what the chairman has to say. That discussion at 1 on Point, right here on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating our nationally ranked businesses and nonprofit leaders, making our community stronger. With donors and funds in 33 Ohio counties, the Columbus Foundation, where your philanthropy and your community come together.
And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus. There is a slight chance of rain today. Otherwise, cloudy skies, maybe a little sunshine and a high right around 60 degrees. There's a slight chance of rain tonight, a low of 43. And then a chance of rain Friday morning, sunshine in the afternoon, a high of 63 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
That's the song Step in Time from the original Broadway production of Mary Poppins. We're talking about Mary Poppins. The Broadway musical is at the Ohio Theater through May 8th. Actors Michael Dean Morgan, who plays Mr. Banks, and Rachel Eisen, who plays Mrs. Brill, are with us. And joining us now is Columbus or Central Ohio native Camille Mancuso, who plays the role of Jane Banks in this production. Welcome to the show, Camille.
Hi, great to be here.
Now, were you familiar with the role before you auditioned for the part?
Yes. I had seen the movie multiple times before I even knew that it was a Broadway musical. And then I had seen the show on Broadway, the original Broadway production with Ashley Brown, when I was about 8 years old. And it was really amazing because I got to see the movie, but on stage. And it was just great because I knew that I really liked everything about it and that I wanted to be Jane Banks.
When you were 8 years old, did you notice the differences between the movie and the stage?
Actually, I didn't really, when I came to the show to start rehearsals, I didn't really remember it being that different from the movie, but I think that there were definitely those changes before in the Broadway production, but I guess I just didn't really realize them until I actually started watching more intently because I was starting to do rehearsals and I, you know, was watching more so, and I realized those changes more so now than I did when I was watching it for the first time on Broadway.
So, Camille, how old are you?
I'm 11.
The characters in the Broadway production are, the characters of the children are, at least at the outset, very different from the way they are in the movie. Mm-hmm. They're brattier.
Yes.
And I was wondering, is that more fun, or what's it like to play that role versus what you might have played if they had echoed the movie more closely?
I think it's great to, you know, get to be really bratty on stage. It's really fun and stuff, but you get to see that they really start off, and along with everyone else in the family, they're kind of, you know, a little crazy too. So then you get to see that because in the movie they're more like sweet kids and like really nice and everything, but then they get to have and they get to learn to be nice and sweet also as well as everyone else does in the show. So I think it's more of the character that you get to see more so than they show in the movie of them just being nice, sweet kids.
I wonder what it's like, you know, from any of you to see something like that. It's so iconic. It's so much part of our childhood. And then to be playing that role in the movie, does it feel, I know you're actors and it's what you do.
I was very excited when Mary Poppins was coming to Broadway because I thought it was such a great story to tell. And I thought it was already theatrical. But for me, it's, I feel like I have two kids, and I feel like they get to live. I get to live through them, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of parents can bring their kids to the show and live through them in that way. But to play the role is yes, it's part of my job, but I love that it's something that's so accessible to people like my kids and kids, and I love that it's a kind of show that so many people can bring. It can be their first show, their first Broadway show, their first big musical that you come to when you're however old, you know, 7, 6. There's some younger ones out there. But yeah, it's...
There were some younger ones out there last night.
Yeah. We have younger ones, yes. What's quite interesting is that the show started in London and I first saw it when it opened in London. And the show has developed rather a lot since then.
It changed from the original London.
How has it changed?
It was a lot scarier. And you're saying the kids are brattier in this. They were really bratty in London. And they made the show quite adult, so adult that they actually said that children under the age of 7 wouldn't be admitted to the theatre.
There was
an execution scene, actually, in the
original. They shot
not
children.
Quite. I mean, these rumours have just developed. we didn't actually have the guillotine. But it was extraordinary, because when the whole Jolly Holiday scene, everybody was a statue and there was no colour. And so what's fantastic is the way that this show has developed from those early days, from going to Broadway, from this amazing production that we have a different set, which I actually think is more magical, definitely, than the Broadway
set.
They
had a fold-out
pop-up book.
Was it a pop-up book?
The house kind of opens like a pop-up book, yeah, like as though you're opening the book.
The one we're seeing at
Broadway
Higher Theater.
Show
I
does
loved
not
it.
Do that. The actual Broadway this, production. I think this is more.
This was the original design that they wanted to do, and then they decided, oh no, it's not big enough. And in fact, it's come back
it's more
to
clever.
Bite them.
Yeah.
Because for all of us that were brought up on pop-up books, to see, and I have a daughter as well, and I had bought pop-up books for her as well, and thinking of it feeling like a doll's house, I was just mesmerized when
it put a grin on my face.
Oh,
the minute
good,
it opened, started out, it's just, oh goody.
Yes. Well, when I saw the show when I was rehearsing in LA just 1.5 years ago, and I didn't know what to expect at all, and I was astounded. Absolutely astounding.
There's a lot of that in this show. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't be surprised that there's a lot of magic in the show, but there's a lot of creative solutions to interesting problems, and that's what I love about theater, is that you're able to solve these, you know, problems of how does she fly, how does she pull things out of her bag, and how do you reveal these beautiful set pieces.
Well, I was showing a 6-year-old round on Sunday, a friend of mine's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
How did they do that? How did they do that? Oh my goodness, that was just
had she
awesome.
Already.
Awesome. Just seen the show, okay. And I took her backstage and gave her a tour, beside herself, completely mesmerized. And that was joyful, absolutely joyful for me. And the parents were gobsmacked as well. Well, I didn't give away too much. And I said, how do you do that? It's magic.
Exactly.
It's all magic. Disney magic.
So kind of play close to the vest. Camille, what are your friends saying?
I think all my friends really like the show, and I also get to take them backstage, and they really like how you get to see how everything happens, and some people are actually really surprised that we can actually do that stuff on tour, because if they've seen the Broadway production or if they've seen the movie, then they know that all of those things happen in the movie or in the show, and they think that it might be more difficult to do it on tour, but really we do... almost
everything.
All of the all of the effects that they have it in the Broadway show and in the movie. So some people are really surprised to see that. So
there's the part where you're on the roof and near the end they're doing
Step in Time.
I don't know if it's Step in Time. Probably.
As
is
it
the
leads
first,
into Step in Time,
the Step
on top
in Time,
of
and it's dark.
Very dark. Yeah.
It's very dark, and I noticed when I don't know how you got down there. You're walking down some kind of steps, and Mary Poppins kind of leans over to check and make sure you're okay, and I wonder, is she really doing that, or is that just part of the acting?
Yeah, well, we're very, very safe about everything, and everything is always checked, and everything always makes sure that we're all okay, and so, yeah, I think it's, she
They're
normally
not very
just,
high up.
Yeah.
It looks high.
You feel
looks
as
really
if you're
high.
On the rooftops with them, but it's, it's just the magic.
It's the magic. So, what's your favorite part, Camille?
I love doing supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. It's amazing. It's really high energy, and everyone on stage gets really excited, and then everyone in the audience gets really excited, so it's really good.
Yeah. What about you, Michael?
The last 20 minutes of the show, for me, is probably the most exciting, where I go from my whole life being smashed to the ground to me discovering the kids again, and finding my childhood again, and then going to the bank and basically telling off the bankers, and then jumping around like a fool.
And you do.
And
you
know, I do.
Yes. Fabulous.
One of the parts that I found the most touching, and again, this story has more touching moments. It goes deeper. So the highs are a little bit higher, the lows are a little bit lower.
I think that's a great way to say it.
There's a really nice contrast there. And one of the parts that I liked is involved Mr. Northbrook.
Oh, yes.
It was a very small moment, but Mr. Banks, it really...
Well, it's his turning point. It's the first time... I mean, you've seen Mr. Banks be so stoic and British and strict, precision and order. And then the children come to the bank for the first time with Mary. And it's almost as though she's created this situation where this one of the bankers comes in and wants a loan, and he's this mean German fellow who wants to just make money for making money. And Mr. Northbrook comes in and he wants a loan because he wants to help his community. He wants to put his fellow folks, the people, to work. And I say, you don't have the collateral. I don't know what to do. And suddenly Jane says...
I say, what's more important, a good man or a good idea?
I said, well, I suppose it's... I should say it's a good idea, but a good man is much rarer and much more valuable. And the next moment, you see me giving the loan to this Mr. Northbrook, who... It's the first moment of softness and tenderness.
I was going to say, don't give it away.
Oh, yes, I won't tell you. but you're right. I think there are small moments like that. And that's a great example of this whole cast has moments to shine. I mean, we have a great company who I feel loves what they do. You see the show and you see people having a great time. And you've got people like Rachel, who is a comic gem in the show. And you've got Camille, who is a delightful and a joy to work with. And I have to say, the energy the kids bring. I mean, mind you, these kids go through the entire show.
It's a lot of fun having kids up there.
Oh, and they are having a blast, and they are very, very good at it, particularly Camille.
We have a couple Facebook critiques. It's on our Facebook chat at WOSU.org/allsides. And this is from Jay Allen. Writes, I remember in the movie Mary lied to the children. She denied that they had been in the chalk drawings that Bert drew on the sidewalk. I also question how positive Mary is as a role model. What she did was witchcraft. Now, there have been other criticisms like that.
I mean, you could say that a whole lot of television.
There's a strong message in this story.
Yeah, there's no... that was interesting, because when I was watching the film the other day...
You still watch it?
Well, it was on Sunday.
Okay.
And so we go, yay, hey. And it's nice to see the comparisons. And actually, at the same time, I got a text message from my friend in England saying, I'm just watching Mary. Anyway, you know, so it's all over the world. I was like, my goodness, some of the dialogue in the film is exactly as this person has said. It's very questionable, actually, and did downright lie. And whereas in our show, she doesn't actually say, no, you didn't. Don't, you know.
They ask themselves.
They actually say, it's more of, oh, my goodness, you know, stop bothering me now. Or it's more of, really, is that what you saw? It's more exactly, she makes them question themselves as opposed to downright lying. But, yes, it's...
And I think she's also questioning what is Mary Poppins. And I think... I mean, maybe this whole thing takes place in our imagination, and there's a lot of things that are magic to me that might not be magic to someone else. I mean, magic could be a witch, but magic could also be something that has changed you for the good. I mean, I don't think we're trying to tell a story that's anything but fanciful and exciting, and there's heart to it. I think she's the personification of unconditional love, and she brings that love
in. As the song says, anything can happen if you let it. I'm the personification of that. You know, be careful what you wish for, and you dream about something, and if you really, really want it and picture it, and you work hard towards that, you can have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mary Poppins, more so in the Broadway production than in the film, and I haven't seen the film in a while, but it seems to me it's more so, she's very saucy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the way she kicks up her heel at the top of the landing.
I think that's part of the reason people love
her,
is she is kind of carefree. She doesn't have to – and she's a servant that answers to no one.
Yes.
She knows that she's practically perfect.
She knows.
She knows it.
She truly is. Yeah.
But there's that fine line between being sassy or saucy and the love that she shares with everyone.
From Robert and Hilliard on our Facebook chat, he writes, I hate to rain on the parade here, but there is a big issue these talk shows tend to ignore. After hearing a great review, I was excited to take my two granddaughters, ages 3.5 and 4, along with my wife. The cheapest cost for the four of us would be $204. Mm-hmm. No discount for seniors or children under a certain age. These downtown productions are not priced for the average guy. What are you seeing out there? I mean, how do you feel about that?
It's really, really difficult because, you know,
it's expensive.
It's expensive, and those theaters are full. Mm-hmm. And I think people are saving up or choosing to go and see a Broadway production as a big treat.
And it is an event. I mean, you're talking almost 20 semi-trucks, hundreds of people coming into town. I mean, I don't think they're making hand over fist money in these productions. But
no. I mean, it's incredible
compared
how
to a film.
Mm-hmm. And it is difficult, and I get appalled by it. But however, what is incredible is that each city prices their tickets differently. And mm-hmm. for those four tickets that you could buy here in Philadelphia, it would have cost double the amount.
Double, mm-hmm. yeah.
And it's the same production.
It's exactly the same production, and it all depends on where we are. So mm-hmm. they try and price it accordingly. And it's an incredibly expensive show to travel. We have 14 trucks filled to the brim. We travel, our crew travels as soon as we come down on the Sunday. They're taking the show down. Then they're traveling. Then they get to the next place. Then they're putting
it. We're hiring about as many people that we bring with us.
Locally, too. Oh, there's a lot of local work.
Well, union, loads of local work, because unions state that anybody backstage has got to be, there has to be somebody local employed for that person.
But you know, I I'm a father that wants to bring my kids to shows, too, and I have to make those choices as well. But you're right. It's definitely something you can't do as much as you might want. But you're right. It's expensive.
It's not something you're going to be doing every week.
No. Mm-hmm.
Not every month. This is maybe a once-in-a-lifetime. And how many shows out there truly are perfect for the family?
For the whole family.
Great point. There's very few. You got the I did Lion King for quite a long time, and that was another event show, kind of like this, that you'll save up and go to. But I have to say, if it's possible, if you can afford it, I think it's something that the child won't forget very soon. But I agree with them. I think there is it's a difficult situation, and you want to provide,
especially in these times.
But honestly, if the ticket prices were $20, the show wouldn't be here, and it wouldn't be the same show. So that's the balance you have to hit.
Rachel, I wanted to ask you and you know, get your input too. You're making your U.S. debut.
I am
with this, and welcome here.
Thank you.
With this production, how do you find the American audience's reaction to the story?
Oh, fantastic! I mean, it's quite interesting because of the things that they laugh at and the things that they don't. And there are typical English jokes that nobody seems to get. Even in the cast, I have to explain it to them. But very warm. Oh, incredibly warm. And I didn't do the show in England at all, just to make sure that people know that. But I've worked for years in England. And the English and British audiences are pretty reserved in the fact that they will only give you a standing ovation if they think you've really, really worked hard and you deserve it. Whereas here, the support is fantastic. They're jumping on their feet.
Do you like it when they clap along and get involved in the rhythm of it?
You know, so often you have a strong audience makes a stronger show. I mean, you get excited. They get excited. You get excited.
Yeah, we feed off of their energy, and it just makes us want to do a better show for them because we know that they're enjoying it.
And I really like the Columbus audiences. They are laughing. They're into the show. They're excited. We all have a good time together.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can always tell from a certain laugh that comes from a scene that I do whether they're going to be with us. And you go, yep, that's it. It's going to be a good night. Yeah. Fantastic.
Well, I've had a good time, and I want to tell you how much we appreciate you coming in after, you know, working last night and coming in this morning.
Not
we appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's sunny outside.
Yes.
Yay!
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's right. By the way, newsflash. well, thanks again, Camille Mancuso of Blacklick, yes. Ohio. Thanks for joining us. Camille plays the role of Jane Banks in this production, and we're glad you could join us.
Thank you.
Also, Michael Dean Morgan, he is playing the part of Mr. Banks and Mary Poppins at the Ohio Theater right now. Michael, glad you could be here.
Been a pleasure.
And also Rachel Eisen. She plays the role of Mrs.
Brill.
I want to say
the brilliant Mrs. Brill.
The brilliant Mrs. Brill. And thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins. Gas prices are up, way up. Join us for Hour 2 of All Sides for a discussion of why the price of gas keeps increasing and how it affects you. That's Hour 2 of All Sides with Ann Fisher, beginning at 11, right here on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record. It's Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, Mike Thompson and his panel will discuss the West Side Casino breaking ground despite disputes. Ken Blackwell looks to the 2012 challenge to Sherrod Brown and how to assess a quality teacher. All that and more on Columbus on the Record tomorrow night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. And it's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus. There is a chance of rain today. Also a windy day with winds as high as 25 miles per hour. And we'll reach a high of about 60 degrees. A slight chance of rain tonight and a low of 43. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Mary Poppins may be a fictional character, but nonetheless the ideal image of a nanny, at least until recent reality TV shows such as Super Nanny and Nanny 911. So what does it mean to be a real-life nanny, and who becomes a nanny nowadays, and what do they use for a spoonful of sugar? Joining us on All Sides now is Cynthia Reinecker. She is co-founder and owner of the Columbus Nanny Agency, and she's a former nanny. Welcome to the show, Cynthia.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What inspired you to become a nanny?
Well, you know, I always, had an affinity toward working with children. I actually started, as many people do, started babysitting when I was in high school and continued through college and just really found that I had a passion for it. I really enjoyed being a part of the children's lives and getting to really, you know, help them with their day-to-day activities. And so I decided it would be a great job to do during college, kind of putting myself through college, and just decided, you know, I honestly just fell in love with it. And I had taken a lot of classes in child development and wanted to continue.
It seems like it's a full-time job, though. How do you do that while you're in college? How does that work?
Well, you know, there are actually, for me, it did start out just part-time. There's actually kind of a trend now where it used to be most nannies did work full-time. They actually used to live in the home as well. But now there are quite a few part-time nannies that work, which is what I did. I did, I was a part-time nanny for a family, and then I ended up taking a little break from school and then transitioning into it full-time, actually worked as both a live-in nanny and a live-out nanny for about 10 years.
What's the difference between a nanny and a glorified babysitter?
That's a good question, and that's a question that I get from families very often. And I think it has to do with the level of, the level of commitment and how invested the person is in with the entire family and with the children. I think a babysitter, you know, we definitely expect a babysitter to come in and make sure the children are safe, make sure that, you know, their meals are prepared, that diapers are changed and things like that. But with a nanny, it's a lot more, it's a lot more engagement as far as, you know, creating educational activities for the children, a lot of different hands-on learning opportunities. It's taking the children on outings to encourage their social development. And then also, you know, nannies are responsible for keeping the house running smoothly. You know, so certainly they help with things like light housekeeping and, you know, cooking on occasion, running errands, and just making things nice so that when the parents come home, they can really just spend time with their children.
What do you do when there's strife in the family? For instance, a la Mary Poppins, particularly the stage production, it's an unhappy family.
Sure.
I don't know if that's been a personal experience of yours, but now that you have your agency, how did you cope with it perhaps when you were a nanny, and how do you advise the folks that you place?
You know, it's a very tricky it's a great question because it is such a unique dynamic. A nanny is certainly more than just an employee. And so because she's working in a home, she's working closely with a family and a family's children, you know, there is always, you know, she's going to be, you know, kind of on the inside a bit more than she would be with a traditional employer. And it, you know, I think it takes a lot of perseverance, a lot of patience. I think it's a nanny understanding, you know, what her role is, that she certainly is there to try to help, you know, mend what she can and help, you know, make things as easy as she can for the children. But on the other hand, she's certainly, you know, not there to interfere or make everything perfect either. I think it's, you know, some of those situations can be tricky, but they can be worked out, especially if she just maintains that good balance of kind of what her role is.
My guest is Cynthia Reinecker. She's co-founder and owner of the Columbus Nanny Agency. She's also a former nanny. If you have a question or comment for Cynthia, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We now have our Facebook chat on the webpage at wosu.org/allsides, too, if you want to go there. Did you see the Mary Poppins film as a child, and were you influenced by it at all when you conceived of yourself as a nanny?
Yes, I watched the show numerous times as a child. It was one of my childhood favorites, and it did, actually. It's interesting because even as a child, I knew I wanted to be a nanny. So it was just and, you know, also influenced by some other people who I knew who were nannies, but definitely influenced by that movie as well. It looked like a lot of fun, even without the magic. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do all the magic and whimsy that she's able to do, but I really liked the idea of really, you know, working in someone's home and getting to care for their children.
You know, I think of the magic as sort of her shtick. Mm-hmm. You know, that was her deal. That's what she could bring to the table. What do you feel like, you know, in the people that you place, everybody brings something different to the table. How did you know what it was you could bring to a family? What was your spoonful of sugar?
I think my spoonful of sugar, as well as a lot of, you know, really great nannies, is just the ability to really relate to children, to see the world through their eyes. So to really get on their level and just have fun and really play. I know one of the things that the children who I nannied for would often say what they liked about me was that they were like, you are just like, you're like a big kid. You're like one of us. And I mean, certainly you have to keep the boundaries. You have to make sure everybody's safe and be in a great adult role model. But I think that a good nanny knows how to really get on that level and be silly and be fun and, you know, come up with silly songs to make chores more fun and things like that.
So the proper role of a nanny nowadays, maybe some people are confused by that because of the show Super Nanny and Nanny 911. They're troubleshooters. They, you know, parachute in for a week or so and try to solve a lot of problems. Do you have people that have misconceptions about what your nannies are going to do for them?
Not generally. I think most families are, you know, prefer the nanny to I mean, a lot of times when I meet with families, they say, you know, certainly they want someone to share their wisdom and to share their experiences. Work with a lot of first-time parents, and, you know, they really value that. But they also are very sensitive to the fact that they don't want someone coming in and necessarily running the show for them. You know, they say, but this is, you know, these are my children. It's my home, and I don't necessarily want someone to come in and take over or take on my role. So not seeing so much of that, I think that, you know, probably the biggest challenge right now that we are seeing is more just it's what it always is in this profession. It's just making sure that the nanny and the family are, you know, constantly in communication with each other, that, you know, each side is providing a lot of feedback and just to make sure everyone is on the same page. And that can be hard because you have two busy parents who are working longer hours and, you know, they have a lot on their plate. And then, you know, there's just only so much time during the day to go over everything.
So. How's the business? How do nannies get paid? How does that work now?
Nannies actually become household employees. So the parents then set her up as a household employee, and they get paid. You know, it's just kind of like you and I. You know, they get a W-2 at the end of the year, and the taxes are taken out. So it's a really great because it's a great change in some ways because they're no longer independent contractors. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, what was the first part of your question? I missed
just, you know, how they get paid and that sort of thing and how the business works.
Oh, yes. And so basically, you know, nannies either can find positions on their own or, you know, more commonly they'll go through an agency. And with the agency, we actually don't employ them through us. We just help them find positions.
Your placement.
Exactly.
Service.
Exactly. So they are still paid directly by the family.
So when you're placing people, I mean, what is that kind of relationship that you have with the nannies then? Is it, do you counsel them? Do you prepare them? I mean, how does that work?
I do. You know, once I meet with nannies and once they are selected to, you know, enter the pool, it's definitely an ongoing relationship. I, you know, help them as far as, you know, kind of what the proper expectations are, really help them determine what kind of a family and position is going to be the right fit for them. And then there's a lot of follow-up as well. So even if a nanny, you know, has been placed and the relationship does not end there, nannies constantly, you know, they contact me if they have questions or concerns or, you know, just asking for maybe some suggestions and advice here and there.
If you have a family that, well, do you interview families? I mean, are there some families that are not a good fit for a nanny kind of position?
There are. Yes, we do interview families as well because really the whole goal is to make sure that both sides are, you know, their needs and expectations are addressed. So, you know, clearly if it's not going to work, if the nanny is terribly unhappy in her situation either. So we do interview families. There have not been that many that we've had to turn away, but there are some, and simply for the fact that we just don't feel that they're quite ready for a nanny at this point.
And how do they take that? As a person, I mean, I would imagine some people feel like they're being criticized.
They do. I think sometimes people feel a little bit of, you know, a little bit shocked at that. And certainly we make sure that we say it in a very, you know, professional manner. But we may, you know, just try to direct them to maybe some other, you know, other childcare options. And certainly, you know, reiterating that it's nothing about them personally. It's just that, you know, perhaps the environment or even the expectations they have are not quite suitable to, you know, or ideal to hiring a nanny.
We have an email from Kim in Columbus. She says, one of my best friends is a nanny. Some days she sends me pictures of the sweet little baby smiling and cooing, and I envy her. Other days she posts on Facebook about being covered in the baby's assorted smelly body fluids. It is obviously a mixed blessing to be a good nanny. And then also from Sarah, an email, she writes, I know a nanny who watches the kids while a mom, quote, works from home, end quote, in another room. She says it is a mixed blessing to have the mom right around the corner. So some nannies are better at having the mom right around the corner than others?
Absolutely. I think a lot of it depends on the relationship that the nanny has with the parent. Some are a little bit, you know, I know that some nannies feel like they're kind of being micromanaged when there's a parent there. I have found that it just really depends on the personality of the nanny. Some nannies are very autonomous and do not really want, you know, they want to do their own thing and don't want to have to feel that, you know, someone's there, you know, right next door, whereas others really appreciate having a parent there to go to in case they do have questions.
There seem to be two images of the modern day nanny. The professional nanny caring for the children of a very wealthy family, and or the domestic servant that nanny that is often an immigrant or a college student who some may visualize or see as underpaid or exploited. What's the reality? What's really going on out there?
I think in my experience, it's more in the middle of that. It's really what I see that is there's definitely a more of a drive for your regular, you know, middle-class families to hire a nanny. It's becoming a more affordable child care option for them. In many cases, the cost is comparable to daycare. So, you know, I know with, you know, the agency, we definitely we very rarely work with either ends of those spectrums. I mean, it's not just reserved for the wealthy or elite anymore. And thankfully, I mean, I know it certainly happens, but I think too that, you know, nannies are becoming much more respected. It's becoming a more respected profession. So hopefully we're seeing a lot less of those that are being taken advantage of and, you know, underpaid and overworked.
So is the Nanny 911 and the Super Nanny, are those a banes to your existence or are they helpful? Or,
you know, I think in some ways they can be very helpful because they are very educational. I know that a lot of times when I interview nanny candidates and we talk about some of the things like discipline methods and, you know, how do they handle temper tantrums and you know, sibling rivalry. And they'll actually use examples from the super nanny. So in some ways, I think that it's very educational. But I do think it's a little bit, you know, it can also put the image, I know it scares some nannies, and it can put the image in their minds that, oh, no, you know, families who hire nannies are dysfunctional and or I'm going to have this, you know, huge task ahead of me when it's not that way very often.
Well, thank you, Cynthia Reinecker, co-founder of the Columbus Nanny Agency. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me.
And you've heard of the nanny government. This was the Nanny Show. Thanks for listening. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.